And Carolyn Yeager has written many articles, German radar articles. She's published a book with the Barnes Review recently called Adolf Hitler, the Artist Within the Warlord, Adolf Hitler You Didn't Know. So she'll be coming on. Pete will be coming on just briefly at about 15 minutes after the hour, and then Carolyn will be coming on for the rest of the show. And we're going to be talking about the feeling of ostracization within the truth movement. So it's something we've all felt. Hello.
Hi, Brian.
Hey, Carolyn. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. I was listening, you know, all my life. And I also thought, when I thought, what am I going to do with my life? I wanted to do the highest. I wanted to look, you know, go to what I thought was the highest thing. And that was art. I just thought art. Wow, you know, art was fantastic from the time I was a little girl. I was
very
attracted to that. And so, you know, I wanted to be an artist, and I thought that's the most, the highest thing I can think of to do. Even more so, I didn't think in terms of, say, being a philosopher. Probably didn't think that that was possible for me or something, but also I always liked art so much, you know.
Oh, interesting.
For fine art, besides just like commercial art and stuff around me, you know, pictures. I always wanted to look at pictures. I always just studied pictures. And we didn't have that much art in our home growing up. It was just a few pictures, mostly family portraits, you know.
Oh, and so what kind of art were you drawn to? Like fine art? You mean like European art?
Figure out how did that happen? You know, how did they do that? I did that with comic books too, you know. Look at these, you always had comic books. And I look at the way they drew these things, and just with a few lines, you know, make a face with an expression and so on. And I just, you know, never got tired of trying to figure out how art was made.
Oh, wow. Yeah, interesting. So did you create art yourself?
Oh, yeah. I spent my life as an artist. I have some of my art on my website.
Well, that's nice.
Later in life, I got kind of sidetracked. You know, just, I don't want to make this about me, but when I started college in 1960.
Yeah.
Actually, 1959, the end, you know, September. And so this was just, you know, this was the worst time that you could come of age, so to speak, in this society, when everything was shifting around. It hadn't gone all the way yet in the early 1960s, but a lot of things had changed. And when I went to, I majored in art. I went to a college first, and we were supposed to have a good art department. And everything was abstract art. Everybody was doing abstract. Well, I liked that. I liked anything. I liked all art. You know, I had already had some visits to museums and stuff, particularly in Chicago. And
yeah.
And I liked all, you know, I liked everything. So it was easy for me to just be won over. And there I was, finally studying, really studying art. I took it in high school. But and it was like I wasn't trained in any way, shape, or form, you know, because everything was okay when I was in school. And I had enough talent that I was and smarts, I guess, that I always got good grades. So I thought, well, I'm doing the right thing. And I didn't work hard at all. I didn't, you know. Then I switched to a regular art school in Chicago. Well, the School of the Art Institute.
Yeah.
In Chicago. It was a very, very good school.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The top in the country. And it was even worse there. And I was kind of lost, you know, because I was a transfer from 2 years in college. And then when I got there, you know, I really didn't have any supervision of any kind, or any mentoring, or any anybody coming after me. I got in with this group of really cool painting students, and then I had decided that to switch my major to painting, and I was just completely lost the whole time. But it was all abstract, New York abstract expressionism, you know.
That's part of Jewish art, isn't it, to undermine mainstream art?
I care about that now, but at the time, I was, you know, I was convinced it was all terrific, but I never could do it. You know, I just couldn't, I had no way to get into it. And so I really lost out there on when I could have been, you know, in a sense, training in real art techniques and so on, and really getting somewhere. It kind of all just went out the window. And I blame the Jews for that. And
they created modern art, right, to basically undermine society.
That's right. And when everything Hitler ever said about art, I just agree with 100%, and I feel like I experienced it, you know.
Wow, what a story. You were there. Of course, I look back in the 60s as such an exciting time, and I realized there was more social engineering by the international Jews to change the society, lower the white birth rate, etc. So you lived through all of that in the 60s.
Yeah, that's when I was in my early adulthood, and I was completely lost. But I thought, you know, I want to admit that, so I didn't admit it. So I just kept barging around.
So what was your impression of the 60s? Did you think it was a good time when you're lost? Did you enjoy the Beatles and the sex, drugs, the rock and roll?
Well, I wasn't into sex, drugs. And the crowd that I was with started getting into drugs a little bit. Drugs weren't really too available, but in our crowd we had an artist who had been a musician for quite a number of years. He was a guy who came from Texas, and I don't remember his name, but he's the one, because of his musician background, he introduced marijuana.
Yeah,
a couple of years after, you know, a couple of years after I first got there, I think, and something like that. And I remember going to somebody had a party at their house, at their apartment, and we all sat in a circle, and he passed this cigarette around. You know, we're all supposed to take a drag off of it. So I did, and I was expecting to go off into Nirvana, Brian. You know, I really was. I was expecting, wow, this is going to really send me somewhere. This is what this is all about.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't do anything. And then I felt a little, odd. But then later, when I had a little more, it made me kind of withdrawn or something. But I didn't feel, what I didn't like about it was I liked stimulants. I liked, I liked coffee. I drank a lot of coffee in those days.
Oh, I drink it now.
And coffee is just my thing, you know. Boy, it just wakes me up and makes me feel sharp. I know what it was.
Me too.
I felt it had a dulling effect. And because I was new to it, it was a little confusing. And so I didn't like it, and I didn't ever participate after that.
So you're part of the Jewish social engineering in the 60s, and so you weren't too fond of it then?
It didn't really work with me, and I went off and got involved in other things from that group, from, you know, left Chicago and so on.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to get into that. You know, I go off on tangents, but...
Well, I was kind of indulging you. I guess we could talk about ostracization within the truth movement, how we get ostracized from our friends or our family or colleagues. Do you want to talk a bit about your experience? I mentioned a bit when I started this show. Yeah.
Oh, you really, you had some good examples there. And I came up with something I have not had a lot of ostracism because I don't really... I came into this in later in my life than you are, and I was already finished, as you know, working in the world. My last work was as a teacher, a public school teacher, an art teacher.
So you weren't fired from any job then? This was after the job. I mean,
yeah. And so I didn't think it would be a problem. But I remember when I first... let myself be known as a National Socialist. That was early on, because I had listened to, but that's not about ostracism. Well, I was so afraid. I thought, you know, I had come upon it all, and you know, being German, I really identified, because I hadn't been able to really do it when I was younger. I really identified with the German, that German period, that particular period, especially.
Great! Wow. So when did you become a National Socialist? When did your thinking go that way?
What?
Yeah. When? What year did you become a National Socialist?
Well, it was a kind of a, you know, I just, I didn't become one because there is no, but I joined this party of Bill White's, which people have brought up since. But the reason I did was I had been listening to this particular radio show that he and this other guy, Jarl, had been putting on. And I thought what they talked about was so exciting. They talked about the SS, they talked about all kinds of things about, you know, in National Socialist Germany, and I thought it was just so great and intellectual sounding.
Wow. So when was this?
Oh, this was back in, you can look this up and find out about it, but this was back in 2006 and 7.
Oh, that time. So who's Bill White?
Oh, I don't really want to go into that here. But he was kind of a flash in the pan, who had got into trouble with the law. And I think he's in prison right now. But at the time, they had this magazine, and so I bought some back copies of it, and I thought it was just fantastic, because it was the first I'd seen of people actually saying, they can doing something about it, saying they're National Socialists. And so I thought, well, I just have to join this.
Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah.
No, but I knew. I thought this other voice in me was saying, "Oh, Carolyn, you can't do that. How can you do that? You can't do that." And it just kept, the urge to do it was so strong. And when I get something like that, I eventually give in to it. So.
Yeah, me too. That's good. Yeah. So you followed your heart.
Out this form that which I had was in the back of a magazine, I guess, and mailed it in with my, well, I wanted to support him. I was going to support him financially, because I was able to, you know, do some support financially of causes that I believed in. And my whole idea after I finished teaching was that I wanted to get into some causes that I believed in, you know. I don't know what word I use for it, but something, you know, I wanted to be a part of some activism. Yeah, that was it. I wanted to become an activist. That was the only thing. See, again, I was idealistic.
So that's right around the time you retired, though, right? You just retired.
Yeah, I did.
So your job wasn't a threat. You had your pension, so you weren't taking too much of a risk then.
Well, I hadn't taught for very long, so my pension was very small. But no, but you're right. There was no risk except personal, you know, personal people looking, you know, judging me.
Yeah. Did you have any friends that turned against you or left you over that?
What if someone in my family or something found out? Well, now my family knows, and they don't say anything to me about it. Except this one nephew of mine. But I want to tell you this story about my other, I only have two nephews, and my first nephew, and my older.
Me too, yeah.
Just the first, was the first one, you know, first grandchild of my parents, my sister's oldest. And so I remember him, so, you know, I always loved him so much. He was such a cute little guy and a nice little boy and all. But I got away from everything, you know. I lived in Mexico for about 10 years, and I didn't keep up with people too well at all. My mom, I did, but and so everybody's growing up, you know. But he's made a very successful career for himself, and he's I'll just say, I was looking at, I happened to look up my first little book on Yahoo, the book I wrote about Auschwitz, the tour.
Yeah, she should tell the audience that where can they find it, and your website is carolynyeager.net.
Yeah, they can find everything at carolynyeager.net. But okay. The book Auschwitz, what the tour guides don't tell you, I because of the new book that came out, I thought, I wonder if this book is on Yahoo. I didn't put it there, but I looked on Yahoo and there it was. And then there was a few reviews for it. So I read them, and the last one was by someone with his using his three initials, and it said, "I think my aunt has lost her mind." Then a couple more things.
Oh. And,
oh, that's my nephew's initials. You think that's him? It must be.
So you think she lost your mind because of what you're saying about Auschwitz?
I mean, I was shocked that he actually wrote that, but he, I have tried to start up email exchanges with him a couple of times, and I never can get it done. I mean, he always responds, says whatever, you know, I asked him whatever, and says, and then that's it. And then he won't write again or ask me anything. So sometimes I've written to him again, and I get the same polite response, but nothing else. So.
So this is your ostracization within the family. Can you talk to him or pick up the phone?
Well, I figure he doesn't want to, so I don't bother him. I don't see why I would pick up and say, oh, well, I'm sorry you don't like, you know, what I'm putting on the internet. Why would I say that? And I went and said his name. I should have done that. So there's no point in it, you know, trying to bother people. But I also... with his sister, my niece, she's very, I've only talked to her a couple of times in all these years, and she's a lovely, lovely person. I admire her so much, and she's done great with her life, and she's always very nice. We talked for an hour one time, the last time, but she doesn't follow through, you know, she doesn't follow up. So I wrote her an email on her birthday earlier this month, and I haven't gotten a response on that. So she did tell me she didn't look at her email very often, all that often, but I could call. I hate to bother her. She works and all that stuff. So,
what's her attitude to your beliefs? So has she expressed anything?
Oh, she wouldn't go along with it. They're both kind of religious. Somehow it worked out that way. My nephew's Roman Catholic. Both my nephews are Roman Catholic now.
That means they're probably pro-Jewish and pro-Israel, right? The chosen people of God.
Pro-Israel and anti-Muslim. Absolutely.
So programmed, yeah.
Yeah. So the thing is, if it hurt my feelings, you know, it would be one thing, but it really doesn't. And I've never... since my original family has felt very much in, I always kept in touch with, but these are my siblings' children, and I never felt like, you know, it was my business what they were doing. I love them, you know, but I don't want to have, then they've got kids, and, you know, you get into all this stuff, and I don't want to really, truthfully, just to put it bluntly, be bothered with it. I don't want to be bothered with remembering all these things that you do for them and all this stuff. So,
and you mean it's not your job to educate them about World War II and the Jews? You feel like, if they want to talk about it, they can. You mean?
That's right. I don't feel like it would be right for me to try to push my views on them.
Yeah, I agree. I feel the same way. Yeah, but you let people know, and if they're interested in talking, they can talk. It depends on them.
Yeah, they're embarrassed. They just don't know what to say or what to think.
I've encountered that.
I imagine they don't talk about me much at all, but if it comes up, they say, well, shake their head. Well, you know, I don't know what got into her. But I've always been into different things, and I've never been, into the common way of life. So, I was very much into metaphysics and all that.
What about your, what just want to ask about your primary family? Have they ostracized you at all, or they accept you, or they know about the Jewish question?
Primary family. I don't have any other family.
Oh, you're the last one.
Well, they're all, my parents are dead. My sister and brother are dead. My, you know, I didn't have children, so.
Yeah, I see, yeah.
You know.
What about friends, other people, or new people that you meet, or new acquaintances that you meet? Do you feel ostracization for those people?
I have some friends here, and I didn't tell them about any of this, and it was kind of growing at the time that we were friends, so I didn't go into it, and they don't, I've just kind of gotten away from everybody. You know, so, and I'm happy. I do this. I don't like to sit around and talk with people about things that I'm not interested in. And there's not much I'm interested in except whatever I'm passionate about.
Yeah, me too. So what do we do? Like, this is something so many people in the Truth Movement feel, or National Socialists feel. We're bored with small talk. And people, when they talk about politics, you realize that they don't know how the world works. It's kind of a useless conversation. They're going back and forth, say Trump and Russia or Hillary and stuff. So what do you say to the people? Yeah, so I guess you kind of don't want to get involved in those conversations unless you can talk about what's really meaningful, right?
That's exactly right. That's how I see it. And so, you know, I suppose we're all like that. And so luckily, just as this came about, there was the internet, you know, I mean, in fact, now that's how I got into it. So the, you know, there's the internet. So we make friends on the internet, and it's satisfactory to me because I never in all my life liked being with people who were kind of boring to me, you know, and trying to put on. And I'm not saying that everybody was boring to me, but I sought out people who were not, but you know.
So you're saying in cyberspace you can meet some good quality people who know the truth, and you can actually talk with people in cyberspace, you mean?
Yeah, and that we're kind of stuck with that because, yeah. You know, I have said, you know, people should get out there in the real world and do things. but I don't do it. And but I have my, you know, I think that some of these men who are leaders, acting like leaders. Now, there's another thing when you talk about the Truth Movement, and I used to use that phrase, the Truth Movement, and that's what it was to me. That's what I got into. But then it became, you know, then we have the today, the alt-right or the pro-white movement, you know, which is not the same as
yeah.
The Truth Movement. But I morphed into that, and because it's for, if you say you're National Socialist, or you they know you're going to get, you're talking about white people, basically. But it's where was I going with that? So now we have this pro-white movement. It's a racial, it's a identity, let's call it identity, racial identity movement. And the people in that are, so many of them, unfriendly to National Socialism.
Yeah.
And want to hide from Adolf Hitler. They want to put Adolf Hitler away in a corner somewhere and say, we're not this, you know. Because that's bad news. We'll never get anywhere. And, you know, you and I agree on this thing that we don't agree with this, that we think that...
Yeah, Hitler comes first.
Yeah, I think that the best, most inspiring leader we've ever had is Hitler. But then he's very identified as German, and he talked that way a lot because that at that time that's the way it was, you know, although he got into talking about Europe later, but some of his best stuff is all about Germany. And it is, you know, and it's so inspiring.
It'd be nice if we had speeches of him in English, but I guess he never spoke any English on camera, right?
Well, no, he didn't speak English.
Yeah, I guess he didn't speak any English. Just such a shame. It would have been great for us to have a speech in English from him.
Well, his speeches were good, you know, and I don't know anybody who is as inspiring and as mesmerizing when you listen to him as he was. It was as powerful as he was. And so
what the power of truth, you know, makes the hair stand up in your head. It's just the power of truth, you know.
And so when you since he did have that, for us not to use it seems so silly for us to even agree. So many of our people even agree that he was a bad guy and we don't want to have anything to do with him. We don't want to listen to him. That's just like throwing away the best thing that you have and then looking around today for somebody.
Yeah, you're right. You and I agree so much on that. Like he's like the precious teaching. Like you said in a previous video, we do have a leader, and the leader is Adolf Hitler, and that National Socialism was a system that actually worked. It was proven to work. It was successful. We have a record of that. So why not use it, of course?
Yeah, and like this nephew, I have a nephew who does talk to me, and he's my younger nephew, and he just happened to call me out of the blue because something came up and he saw me on the internet, and he called me up. And so we've been having a nice friendship, you might say, since then. We talk every month or so for never can seem to stop. So the long conversations. But he doesn't like, he's read all the stuff that I asked him to read and so on. But he'll never like Hitler because he's a constitutional conservative American. And he says he doesn't like socialism and in any form whatsoever. And he doesn't like big state government, doesn't like big government. And of course, Hitler was all about big government, and also Europe is. Europe is very different from the USA. It's, they have, powerful governments there and welfare states. And the people basically like it that way. They seem to. They vote for them. In the USA, we've got this history and tradition of saying, you know, we're the rugged Americans and we have our own way of doing things, and everybody should be free to do what they want. And but that gives us all this freedom here. So it's kind of a contradiction, see, because I'm glad that I have to be grateful that I'm an American because I have all this freedom that I wouldn't have if I were in a German living in Germany.
I guess so. I guess that's true. So can I say your nephew's not with us on National Socialism?
Yeah. It's all kind of when they. This is what gets me about the worldwide movement. Well, I think it doesn't work because there are still differences and animosities among European people. It wasn't. It was just this. What is today? Last week, a European, because I called him an Irish, I called him Irish. He then started taking off on Americans who had it so easy and could, you know, with their freedom and didn't have to be careful like the Europeans did. He was a real European and he plays up being a European. And so there's this, well, there was real animosity. He really attacked me.
Oh, yeah.
See, this kind of stuff goes on. And this idea that, it's not true at all. It's not true. And when I say things like that, people call me divisive. But I think people are not willing to deal with the reality.
Yeah. Well, it looks like our break is coming on, so hang on there for about 5 or 6 minutes, Carolyn. I'll bring you have to have you back on the other side. We're just having our break now with Revolution Radio. And if you want to call in, you call in at 360-362-4322. Okay, talk to you soon.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Okay, we're back on Revolution Radio. My guest, Carolyn Yeager. So, Carolyn, how are you?
Yeah, I'm still here, Brian. You know, they have a long break here.
Yeah, it's quite a long break, Revolution Radio. A few announcements. So where do we leave off? We're talking about your nephews and your family. And
yeah, well, probably, you know, I kind of just took over here and start going with popping into my mind, so I'm going to let you guide the show from now on. But yeah, the idea that you know, I can see now from my perspective that I have been all my life an extremely idealistic person, and I wasn't satisfied with anything that didn't represent high ideals for me in my, you know, in my thinking, and I really did once my father said about me that I didn't care about money. He doesn't care about money. And I thought, well, I did care about money because at that time I needed money. But, you know, I mean, I wasn't doing very well financially. But that has never been my motivation for anything. And if it had been, I could have done very well. I'm sure I've made a lot of money, but I've done fine as it is.
Yeah, so you're motivated by high ideals. I can see that people in the truth movement, because they make sacrifices. They lose friends, they lose family. Why would they do that unless they had some high ideal? They sense something was more vital, had more meaningful, a more powerful truth that it needed to be expressed, and they felt it was very, you know, good thing, you know, to do that.
Well, that's right. And a lot of people have made greater sacrifices because, like you, you know, they were still in their working years when they were doing this, and you have to admire that.
I was 55 when I got, you know, fired from my job at Capilano University. So I guess you're already in your mid-60s, retired, when you really came out publicly or got more public involved, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Then just on the internet, and I thought, well, nobody's gonna see me here because you know, it was people weren't on the internet to that extent that even then than they are now, as they are now. Now everybody is, but I know a few people that still don't use it. I don't know how. I was pretty slow, I thought, but I always get into things finally.
Yeah, usually the internet, it's not about your own immediate community where you live. Like, I'm known all over, but if I walk down the street here, people don't recognize me, so they don't ostracize me. I was actually at a park nearby about a week ago. I got one scowl from someone. I thought, well, maybe he's probably seen me on the internet, you know. So I walked by, but most wouldn't know. So with you in your own immediate community, when you walk down the street, people don't ostracize you there, do they?
No, but I just have, you know, shrunk my circle of friends. You know, pretty social, pretty much involved with various things when I first came here and from Mexico. And then, but now I don't see, but I, well, a few people, but most of my socialization is done on the internet.
Yeah, that's going to happen to us.
No, because like I say, maybe it's just because it's easier, and you don't have to get that involved. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not like you can find a group of National Socialists in the city or the town where you live and have a regular get-together. I mean, I do have some people here, but I guess you don't have a group, right, where you live. Do you want to talk about the state you live in or the city?
Not too much, but I did, there was a whole group of people that I met, but they were involved with Republican politics, and not so much Republican as truth politics, a lot of things, but they wouldn't have gone to Adolf Hitler, you know, they wouldn't
yeah.
have, I wasn't there, I wasn't willing to do that then.
How but, about the Jewish question, would they talk about that?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Probably. I don't think we were talking about that. We were, you know, when I got involved with what you call what Pete's with, you know, the Barge of You, but with not with American. One of the first things I started looking at was American Free Press. That a friend I met here, he introduced me to a whole bunch of stuff, to the Truth Movement, you know, and to this radio station that had. That was local at the time, that was playing all these rebroadcasting sort of shows from Republic Broadcasting and that Genesis station. You know, I just heard them mention Dr. Ott in your Revolution Radio, with whatever he was, you know, whatever you call it. Dr. Ott was very big back then, and I did an expose on him. See, that's another thing. I do these exposés on people, and then they don't like that. But there's a lot of people. I shouldn't say this right here, but I won't say who, but there's a lot of people who were in the Truth Movement, who were really just in it for the money. And making money somehow through, you know, selling stuff and all that. There's charlatans everywhere. And
yeah, I can understand that. It's probably not a lot of money to be made, I guess, in the Truth Movement. Lying seems to make a lot more money, you know. Yeah.
Well, yeah, they're selling things. They're selling stuff, and if you think of the listening audience, you know. Back then, it was just listeners. It's enough to get you a pretty good, a fairly good income on whatever you're selling. It's something.
Anyway. Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah.
But I'm not saying that the people, but and then some of what they're selling is not very good. You know, it's not only Jews that lie.
That's true. Although they're, I guess they lie to the goy as part of their Babylonian Talmud, it's yeah. kind of recommended, I guess.
Their lies are worse, but our own, we have people in our own so-called, well, you know, in the greater movement who are not telling the truth. And what they know it, but they don't think it makes any difference. And just to keep their reputation going so they can sell some stuff. So I because I'm very idealistic, I don't tolerate that well, you know, when I see that and when I recognize or I find out. I think it should be, you know, spread out to everybody and you know, and other people don't think that. So there's so many, well, I guess, you know, there's so much variety in this so-called movement that you go from one extreme here to the other extreme. And I'm probably on one extreme. So the other, when you get closer to the other, I get more and more disappointed in it.
I guess that's human nature in any group of people. They're going to be a mix of people like that, you know, good and bad. It's like that everywhere.
Manage to hold all that kind of thing together. Like you think about Adolf Hitler. You know, he had, no matter what kind of a party you have, you're going to have a range of people in it. You know, you're going to have different wings and, you know, from this end to the other. So you have to have a very strong, charismatic, popular and powerful leader to hold all these people together.